Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with my newly returned co-host, Tim Henney. You're going to get a little airplay out of this. A very little.
Yeah.
In fact, that's it. It's over.
In fact, you're going to do all the talking, and I'm going to do none of the talking.
That's right. Okay. As long as we have agreement there. Okay, well, this morning we're joined by Summit County historian Navi Vernon, who joins us to share the art of documenting culture, well, and history. It's our monthly segment on arts and culture in our mountain community. As is said about knowing history, we can't understand the present without knowing our past. Most of us know something about our area's silver mining past, but perhaps that's where it stops. Not so for Navi Vernon at all. She has lots of history to share with us. She's joined by Hadley Dynack of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. And good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So, Navi, you must have a favorite sort of part of history. You handed me this book you've just written on, or curated, or however you call it, on the railroads in Summit County. Would you say that that's your favorite? What is your favorite part of Summit County history?
I just have a passionate feeling for history.
Overall?
Overall. And it combines a lot of different types of history. I think Summit County is so diversified, so we don't have to just be passionate about one thing. And when you do and study and research the different little towns that we have in Summit County, you'll find that we are different. We're unique, and each little town is special. Yeah. I'd like to encourage all the mayors, in fact, to use their history and enchant their little towns with it. It's an economic stimulator if you use it right.
That's right. So wouldn't that be interesting for you to give, and maybe you have in the past, you take all the mayors of all the little towns in Summit County and give them a little seminar. Here's what you need to know about history here.
Yes, I need to do that.
That's great. So where is the museum, the Summit County Museum? I hear it's downstairs in the county building.
Yes, the Summit County Museum is hidden. In fact, it looks like it's in a little broom closet when you enter the Summit County Courthouse. But it is down in the basement. It's very unique. It's homey. It's not like other museums. You can walk around and touch all the artifacts, which is a little scary sometimes with the crowds. But people can come there and enjoy themselves. And you can come there and be by yourself and just stand, read a lot of the history. It's about the people mainly. And that's what I think the history of Summit County is about the people. And so we're open from Monday through Friday, from 8 till 5, and you're always welcome. I like the courthouse too, and I use it as the museum too, because I like to use the old with the new, and I get really passionate about that. And I love our courthouse because it has that unique ability to combine the old building with the new building and all the new things. Sometimes we get tied up with old and we don't progress. And I don't like to do that. I like to add the new with it too, because we're the ones making the history now. But to learn what the old people did and the people that worked in the mines, the people that done logging, the people that built the railroad, the people that built our communities, we have to have a respect for them. And you gain that by doing the history.
Navi, how many people go through the museum on maybe a week or even a day? You just talked about the crowds that can be down there at times. Are there lots of people that can get into the museum? And
no, the museum isn't built for a lot of people at one time. And we do have tours come in with 20 to 40 people, which they can handle that. But I like it because it is unique, and maybe three or four people as a family can come in and just enjoy the museum themselves with not a lot of other people pushing them around. You can stop and read. I've noticed there's some people that like to read and do the history, and then there's some that zip through and don't look. I'm kind of one of them kind that zip through. But there is people that love to read the history, so I've combined it with a lot of literature and then with the artifacts. I have to say that people have been so gracious and donated to it. And I have to be thankful for them people. And I do care about their artifacts that they have brought in. I do like respect towards the artifacts that are there, but you can walk around them. And I think that's what people have enjoyed. They're not shut off and at a door and peeking in. They can walk in and actually touch and feel the artifacts if they want.
So the tours that come through, are those school tours?
Or some are, some are school tourism? Tours. Some are senior citizens.
Right.
Some are handicapped people that's come. I've had all kinds. I have people from Scotland. A lot of the countries come. I am surprised at what that little museum can bring and stop people, and maybe they'll go eat after. I don't know. But each town could do a museum. That museum does not cost you any money. It's in a building. The heat's there. The lights are there. Mm-hmm. And it's inside a building, and it's down in the basement. It has cobwebs even in it sometimes.
That makes it feel more historical.
But it feels historical, you know, and it gives a feeling. I think that's what people enjoy about it. I didn't realize it was going to be that mm-hmm. until the people come up and tell me how they've enjoyed it. And they like it. So you don't need a big fancy museum in your town. You can create one in a building, in a basement if you want to. But you have something that the people are going to stop and see.
Yeah. It's all about the history. And you've been doing this for about 14 years. Since
approximately, somewhere there.
Wow. Wow. That's
it's
great.
It's went fast. But
so I mentioned in the intro that, you know, most of us know something about our silver mining past. And for many of us, that's all we know. But if you were to try to enlighten someone in a conversation, like this one, what might you say about, you know, of course, our silver mining past is a very rich history, but what you might not know is this. And what would that be?
Oh, I think probably somebody that didn't mine, that was running the store in Park City mm-hmm. and knew all the miners, maybe even the pool hall. You know, they knew the characters and the people. I think you got to do the people to really understand your history and understand what they went through. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine working in a mine?
No.
And being a woman in Park City with snow clear up to your doorstep and you're snowed in for years. My aunt lived over here. So I climbed the wooden stairs one day and went into her little home, which was very humble, and she did not have much. And the house, the roof went out onto the hill, and she had a coal stove and just a couple of bedrooms, but it was humbled. But I know what the people went through, and that's what you understand when you read the history. And I have to tell you about a book we've done of Echo Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
Echo Canyon is Summit County's most wonderful historic place. And all of you in Park City need to come over and visit us. Go up Echo Canyon. Learn the history of it. We have a book that we've made that's called Echoes of the Canyon. And you can purchase it, or we have a brochure. We have put interpretive signs over on the east side so you people in Park City can come over and enjoy us. And we can come over and enjoy Park City.
Yes.
Because Park City has a wonderful museum.
Can you clarify for those people who may not know where Echo Canyon is? I mean, we know Echo Reservoir. We know the little township of Echo sitting mm-hmm. out there along I-84. Where is Echo Canyon?
Okay, Echo, like the little city of Echo is there, and you'll find it. But you go under the I-80 underpass, mm-hmm. go on the old frontage road, head up towards Evanston, Wyoming, but on the old frontage road so that you can see the interpretive signs we put out. All of those, all up through that canyon is landmarks that are named. And you can stop, and we have the signs. We have this brochure that you can take also with you that describes the landmarks for you. But you have to understand that the Echo Canyon is a gateway to the West, and everybody has come down through that canyon. You have the Pioneers, the Donna Reed Party, the Harlan Young Company. And they come, the Harlan Young Company and the Donna Reed people come before the Mormons. The next year, in 1847 is when the Mormons come down through. So you did have the trappers and the American natives there also. But But there's so much in Echo Canyon. When you, and let me go back to going up the old frontage road or whatever. It's the old Lincoln Highway, which is another outstanding thing about Echo Canyon. And then you go, you can come down the Lincoln Highway or go up it. And then you can go over into Castle Rock if you go up that way. Go over the bridge, go over to Castle Rock. That is a historic place. That has landmarks, four or five landmarks. The Pony Express station was there. You've got the railroad history. It goes on and on and on what is in Echo Canyon. And you need to come and learn about it and appreciate it.
Now, V, is that right? So Echo Canyon is right where the railroad tracks and the interstate go through?
Yes.
Or are these offshoot canyons from the main transportation?
From the main transportation. You can go up I-80 and go to Castle Rock and also come down Echo Canyon that way. But for you people that's coming from Park City, you need to go under the underpass, go up the old frontage road, go across the old railroad bridge, go on I-80, go to Castle Rock, turn around there and come back down. Then you will come to the Echo Information. And this is where we come in with the art, that I like to use the art for history. Mm-hmm. And we had a sculpture, a bronze life-size oxen, put up on the hill that overlooks Echo Canyon. You can see the Steamboat Rocks, amphitheater from there. It's a beautiful sight. And then you have the Echo Information that is opened now. Hotel Park City and Zermatt from Heber has opened it up. It's nice again. A lot of information is there for you. And you can just enjoy the site, climb the hill, and look over your Echo Canyon, because that is your canyon. Your history is your history is yours. Mm-hmm. Your community is yours. And your county is yours. Be proud of it. Be glad that you live here. And take care of it. You know, I have to go back to this book we done, Under One Sky.
Beautiful book.
And it is, and we've used it to promote the county. And the local photographers gave us the photos in it. It's beautiful, and it promotes the county. Come use it, come buy it, and use it for things. But this is more of a sustainability. I want you to keep our skies blue, and I want to keep our water clean, and I want our county to stay beautiful. Even though we're growing, we want it to stay beautiful and keep it. But we do have several books that represent several things.
I have a feeling we could talk to you all hour,
Navi.
You just have the sparkle in your eyes when you're talking about history, and thank you so much for sharing, especially about Echo Canyon. I think that's wonderful, and I admittedly have not been there. But Hadley,
I was going to add that a lot of these driving tours and stories that Navi's sharing are on the Summit County website. So if you are interested in taking this driving tour up Echo Canyon, or many other driving tours actually that Navi has designed and curated stories about, you can go to the Summit County Historical Society website and download all of those.
Is that linked from the main Summit County website, or is it a separate website?
No, it's LinkedIn. On the Candy Summit Candy website.
You know, I always struggle when my parents come to town to find things for them to do. And this is something that would be so great. They love history and they love driving tours. And so what a wonderful addition to the repertoire of things that we offer for visitors. And, you know, we thought we might also, either one of you can talk briefly about the other museums in the area that we don't necessarily think about. Of course, we think about the Park City Museum here on Main Street.
Yes. There's one that gets forgotten, and it's the DUPs, the Daughters of the Utah Pioneers. And if you ever go there, please leave them a donation, because those ladies work so hard. And you know what? If we didn't have what they have written and done for us, we would have nothing. So that it is good. Camus has a DUP.
Okay.
Francis has a little DUP. Colville has a DUP. And Hennifer has a brand new DUP that is absolutely wonderful.
Hennifer, okay.
And Hennifer has a lot of history. That little community is very proud of their history, and you will see it promoted there. But don't forget Echo Canyon. I know Echo looks dead, but you have a little Echo church there that has a little museum that you can attend. And go there and support Echo. But it's got more history than you'll ever know. I know it looks like a dead little community, but don't forget Camas, and don't forget the Uintas, and don't forget Little Piawa, and and Colville. Each little town is unique, and you will love each one of them. Stop and talk to the old locals and enjoy it. They can tell you a lot. And I love the new locals, too. They will make it.
Excellent. Well, Navi Vernon, Summit County historian, thank you so much for joining us. Will you come back, perhaps? Maybe we'll just have a history show. That would be wonderful. You could bring some of those old locals.
Okay, that's what we need to do.
That is.
There's a lot of people that can tell you better stories than I can.
Well, you've done pretty well. Thank you for joining us on The Mountain Life in Hadley-Dynack. Thank you for curating this spot that we do monthly on the arts and culture and how it connects to our mountain town.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment, shifting gears to women and hormones. When we return, it's The Mountain Life.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics, Park City resident and KPCW fan. Our practice offers solutions for knee and shoulder problems to enjoy the active Park City lifestyle. More information is available on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
Matt here from San Francisco Design. Since the start of our business in 1990, we have been supporting KPCW. We offer home decor for Park City and Salt Lake and feature modern furnishings from around the world. Whether you're looking to furnish an entire home or just redecorating a single room, we can help with our in-house design team. Located on Bonanza Drive and on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney.
Sparkly little Navi.
Navi Vernon. Wow, that was
rumor
great.
Was she doesn't like to do radio interviews. I think we were misled.
I think
she's fabulous.
Oh, really wonderful. Well, we're now joined by certified nurse midwife and women's health expert, Marcia Scoville. As I said before, if you're a woman and the balance of hormones in your body is important to you, you probably already know who Marcia Scoville is. Alpine Apothecary often brings her up to Park City to present talks. She's giving one this evening at the Temple Har Shalom. And Marcia Scoville, welcome to
Hi.
The Mountain Life. Great to have you. Thanks for
Thank
joining
you.
Us.
Sure. Thank you very much.
So I have attended one of your talks before on women and hormones, and the talk this evening at Temple Har Shalom is sort of one in the same series, or what is the twist this evening?
Well, this is a great time of year to talk about stress.
Oh, yes.
And so we're sort of talking about stress and its impact on hormones. Obviously, anybody who comes who has specific questions is welcome to ask whatever their questions are, but we're sort of focusing on what stress does to us, and we'll talk a little bit about what we can do to stress, I guess, how we can help get rid of some of the stress in our lives.
Well, in addition to being around the holidays and the stress involved, we often veer off our course of good nutrition, and I know that can really contribute to issues with hormones in women as well, right?
It can. So you're talking about how our neighbors and friends love us at Christmas time with plates full of all kinds of sugary goodies.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and I think as a culture, we're sort of vulnerable to that because family and traditions and just wanting to be good neighbors sometimes does lead us toward that. I like to tell people that if you go to a party and there are wonderful things around and you bring your own carrots and munch on them, that the people that are doing the party probably will have trouble figuring out why you're not partaking of all the lovely things they've offered. It's possible to be okay with a very tiny amount, you know, just a taste. If you get a plate of cookies, maybe have one cookie and give the rest away or something along those lines. There are also ways to cook holiday goodies that are not as calorie-laden, not as carbohydrate-laden, and certainly not as sugar-laden as many are.
Marcia, I wanted to ask you about that because it sounds like we're speaking in code and using nutrition as code for too much sugar during the holidays. But you just brought in calories and, you know, other and carbohydrates being other aspects of the nutritional challenges that we face. But can we distill it down to something as simple as sugar? Because we hear a lot about sugar these days.
Well, it's about time.
Yeah.
Sugar is an amazingly difficult thing to manage in our lives. We have, for reasons that probably have to do with survival thousands of years ago, our tongue is just, it loves to have sugars and it loves to have fats because those contribute energy. And sometimes when one doesn't have much to eat, as may have been the case for many, many years, energy is what we're always looking for. Sugar has been implicated recently. It's been outed, I guess, in the sense that it is the primary reason we have cholesterol problems. So it's not just the blood sugar problems and potential risk for diabetes, but it is also potentially a cholesterol problem inducer.
And how does that relate to hormones?
Well, it relates to hormones in a lot of ways. In fact, one of the things that drives sort of a decrease capacity to cope with sugar is when we've been stressed over time. One of the things stress does is makes our cells insulin resistant. And when they do that as a matter of self-defense, actually, because cells can sense what the local environment is in the body around them. And if there's a lot of sugar present in the blood, then cells try to protect themselves from uptaking too much sugar. And they do that by becoming insulin resistant, because insulin is what helps a cell obtain sugar from the blood supply. So when they're insulin resistant, neither the sugar nor the blood is being used by the cells. It's circulating around throughout our body. And cortisol, which is the stress hormone, affects hormones both directly and indirectly. I have a great slide that shows how they're all interrelated. Cortisol is part of the actual system that all of the hormones we're familiar with, estrogens, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, all of those hormones are in an integrated system, and cortisol is in that system, the fight-or-flight hormone.
Wow.
And so when you're in fight-or-flight mode or you're very stressed, your body tends to reallocate resources to producing cortisol that might be needed to make other hormones. So that's sort of the indirect effect. Also, cortisol can knock hormones off receptor sites and sit on the receptor sites, which makes a cellular-centered deficiency for certain hormones. Cortisol is essential when we really have something we need to escape from, but at other times it's just not. It doesn't play well with others because it's to save your life, and hence it's such a high priority that there isn't a lot of sharing going on with other hormones that need to be created.
So with all women being so individual and the way that our hormones interact in our bodies so different, is it even fair or correct at all to say that cortisol typically would affect, you know, if you tend to have low estrogen, for example, is it going to inhibit that production more than, say, testosterone or progesterone? Does that question make sense?
It's kind of an equal opportunity barrier.
Yeah. Uh-huh, okay.
The system is pretty complex, and some hormones are more vulnerable than others. The DHEA is the most vulnerable because those two hormones, DHEA and cortisol, are sort of what I like to call protective partners. When we have a hormone that can harm us, we have another hormone that tries to prevent the harm. And DHEA tries to prevent insulin resistance. It also tries to support our immune system. And when we're stressed for a long time, our immune system is suppressed. That's why people will sometimes have a lot of stress and catch every little virus and bacterium that comes along because their immune system's not as robust. So that's the most direct effect. But the fact that it can supplant hormones at the receptor site, because it resembles the hormones, it's made in the same system. So it's a similar structure, and so it has a tendency to blockade all the hormones. Not necessarily to the same degree or necessarily at the same time, but it certainly makes it difficult to have a balanced, well-functioning hormone system.
So is it true then that when women get to that premenopausal or menopausal time in their lives and they're looking to replace hormones, is it important to first look at these things? I mean, I know it is. I know the answer is yes. But to first look at your stress levels, how you know your diet, before you are even prescribed hormone replacement. Is that sort of your tact?
It would be lovely if people who came to see me had all conquered those really difficult aspects of having better balanced hormones. You know, lifestyle changes are the most difficult thing that healthcare providers have to work with, because they require change, and they require change in the context, especially with someone who's already very stressed. It requires change in a context where they feel like they are powerless to make change. And so we have a lot of discussions about how do we make those changes. But yes, absolutely. I mean, you're going to feel better generally in any case if you're well-nourished. That is to say, you're eating one of those lovely high veggie, quality protein, good fats, low-carbohydrate, multi-grains and quinoa and some of those kind of carbs, and as little sugar as is possible. Everyone feels better when they do that. It's interesting when patients start doing that. They feel like they've discovered a miracle because they feel better. But it's inevitable. When we eat better, we feel better.
Absolutely. Well, your talk this evening is at Temple Har Shalom in the library from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. And I'm told there will be plenty of time for Q&A, and I bet that's something that you get a lot of because, as I said, we are so individual as women.
We are.
So you'll be there and allowing lots of time for that.
Absolutely. And Karen Karaskia usually brings the most amazing little aperitifs that are absolutely sinless. They are. they're organic, they have no sugars, and they taste wonderful. And I think that in of itself is worth coming, because you find out, hey, I can enjoy treats that are good for me. So
that's
yep.
Right. Okay, great. So Karen Karaskia of Alpine Apothecary will also be there. Marcia Scoville is a certified nurse midwife, but she's also an expert in women's health. And your business is called All for Women. All for Women. Thank you. All right, Marcia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Lynn and Tim.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment with a wonderfully interesting book, Nadia Lopez. She's written a book called The Bridge to Brilliance. It's all about an inner city school that she founded, how she inspired, well, she's inspiring the whole nation and even the world. When we return, stay with us.
This is J.C. Coleman, manager of the Park City branch of Fairway Independent Mortgage, helping out KPCW. Celebrating 20 years, the Fairway Independent Mortgage team provides lending options for jumbo, conventional, condo, hotel financing, and more for the Park City homebuyer, located at 1245 Deer Valley Drive. Details at lendtopc.com, NMLS number 2289.
Celebrate 20 years at the George S. and Dolores Story Eccles Center for the Performing Arts with Park City Institute's 2017-18 season. Enjoy Dance with Momex, legendary sounds from Robert Cray, Lyle Lovett, Mavis Staples, thought-provoking conversations with Monica Lewinsky, Anne Lamott, and the ACLU's Anthony Romero. New Year's Eve with Rihanna Giddens and an anniversary party featuring Pink Martini. Season begins December 9th. Call the box office at 655-3114. Brought to you by the Park City Institute, a nonprofit organization.
Park City Institute supports KPCW.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life. Healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, our next guest has been recognized many times over for her lead by example, inspiration in education. Nadia Lopez is the founding principal of a school called Mott Hall Bridges Academy, where there's a model for quality education that includes safe, nurturing, and an innovative learning environment. It just so happened that after founding this school, it was featured on the very popular Humans of New York back in February of 2015. And after that, our guest, Nadia, was invited to speak at Harvard. She was invited to the White House. She's delivered a TED Talk on the revolution of education and was nominated as a finalist in the Global Teacher Prize. She's also the recipient of the 2015 Black Girls Rock Change Agent Award and many other awards. She's now written a book called The Bridge to Brilliance. It presents a new ethos for teaching the country's most disenfranchised and disadvantaged children one that affirms their voices are interesting, intelligence, and that, yes, they matter. Nadia, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Well, thank you so much for having me this morning. How are you doing?
Well, we are doing great. And,
great.
You know, your story, I love that it is very authentic in that mm-hmm. after founding this school, you almost called it quits.
Yes.
Talk about that, if you would.
Well, so many people may be familiar with the story from Humans of New York when my scholar, Vidal Shasnet, was approached and asked who is the most influential person in his life. And he states that I was that person, that I reminded the scholars that every single time they're not in the classroom, that basically they're stealing time from being educated, and there's a school-to-prison pipeline, and those who live in those communities where the prisons are actually making money based off of them not being in class and becoming educated. And so when the post came out and there was, within 24 hours, a million people who liked the post, I was at a place where I didn't even think I was worthy enough of one of my scholars acknowledging me in that way. The job has always been difficult in terms of being an educator, but to be a school leader is very isolating. And oftentimes, you know, my staff, being teachers, being in the classroom, they don't have to see all of the politics that go on beyond the classroom in terms of compliance, expectations. Mm-hmm. Our scholars by no means are coming in on grade level, so the stress of having to figure out how to close gaps and then still meet the needs in terms of standardized assessments, there's just a tremendous amount of pressure that comes with that. And then, you know, I'm also a mom, and I have a teenage daughter, so I found that I spend so much time worrying and dedicating myself to my craft and being a school leader and taking care of everyone in this building, but didn't feel like I was doing the same in my own household. So I was very frustrated. I was overwhelmed. I felt that I kept asking for help, and everyone kept saying to me, you'll be okay. You know, this too shall pass. You're Nadia. You'll be okay. And I was just like, no, I'm not there. And I felt depressed. Once again, I felt isolated, but I also felt like no one was listening and not seeing the value in these children. So I had begun writing my letter of resignation, and I was just serious about it. And it wasn't until my mom was telling me that I needed to pray, and I was just like, Mama, I don't want to pray. Not today. No, Jesus can't fix this. And she essentially said to me, you have to change your mindset. But I didn't, and she prayed for me. But it was that Monday that the post came out. I actually did pray for myself, and I was just in a place of being in gratitude that I was chosen for what I do and the lives that I'm able to touch. And it was as if the answer came that I was doing the work that I was called to do, because the comments that I had read really resonated with not only myself, but the story had resonated with so many folks who were either in the same predicament being in education or understanding that there was an educator in their lives that had tremendous influence. And the reason why they are where they are today is because of that individual.
So talk about the children of the school. I mean, you started as a middle room classroom with 24 underprivileged students. Mm-hmm. And also talk about the community of Brownsville.
Sure.
And what you were up against. Because it wasn't like there were some kids that were on grade level and some that mm-hmm. weren't. I mean, this was pretty much across the board, right?
It was the greatest challenge ever. But it was a good one. So when I opened up the school, we were promised 84 scholars would be coming here. But unfortunately, there was a court injunction for another school that was closing that ended up not closing. So I literally had to go out into the community and find kids. I was giving out cupcakes. I was handing out T-shirts. I was being a cheerleader at parties, block parties, whatever it was. I was just trying to find kids. And something about doing that and parents who don't know you but think that you know what, this is going to be a tough person, so I'm going to take a chance with my child in that school. But what I found was the children who were coming here were the children that lacked discipline, had the highest rate of the lowest attendance rate. So on average, I had kids who had a minimum of 50 days absent, and we only have 180 days of school, so they had more than 100 days of being late. So if they weren't in school, they were late all of the time. So there was no prioritizing education in any shape or form. The kids came in, and even to this day, my kids come in under a third grade reading and math level, so they can range from kindergarten to third grade. But these children that I had, they really had a lot of issues, whether it was mental health issues, whether it was emotional disturbance, it was academic gaps. And being a special education teacher, I understood what this looked like, but it's very hard for teachers who are not trained to deal with kids with such extreme cases. And so it didn't help the fact that in our community, the average income is $11,000. It didn't help with the fact that only 32% of the residents here have a high school diploma and 14% have a bachelor's degree. It didn't help the fact that there's so many. We have the highest concentration of housing developments, and families rarely ever leave out of this community, which is a one-block radius. It was everything that would make you feel like it was a helpless, dire situation. But having experience in similar communities in Brooklyn, I knew that what children really needed was access. They needed someone to believe in them, someone who was going to be willing to fight for them and fight with them. You have to have a ton of faith to stay committed and just understand that there's going to be something greater. And they just had to see themselves beyond their circumstance. And so that really is what has been the foundation of how I've created the school and been able to sustain it.
Nadia, when you talk about the school itself, the Mott Hall Bridges Academy, I'm curious because you've talked about the landscape of the community, you've talked about the landscape of the children who come into the academy, and what is it, I mean, when you talked about 84 kids being committed and then another school that had problems, you know, siphoned off a whole bunch of those kids, what is the facility like? I mean, are you working with, you know, what we sort of understand some of these dysfunctional institutional facilities, or is this a high-functioning academy?
So are you asking me specifically about my school?
Your school.
So the way I've created a culture, the way I hire teachers, the way I'm persistent in what my expectations are, this is a high-functioning school. Now, the scholars come in at various levels. They come in, some come in at the lowest levels, like I said, kindergarten, and they're supposed to be in sixth grade, but there are scholars who can do exceedingly well and compete on a high school level. But overall, who I get, I have no control over.
Right.
You know, it's a middle school process that they get to apply, and it's literally a lottery. So it's by choice that they select the school, but it's also a lottery how they get placed into the school. It is my job to then create a culture and the expectation that says learning is important. You have a future, but you have to put time into that future. But it's going to be cultivated by individuals who are passionate about what they do, that are committed to you becoming great. But there has to be a partnership. There needs to be a partnership between my staff, the community, outside organizations, the parents, and the scholars themselves. And so part of our motto is that we're connected to succeed, because without all of those entities coming together, then there is no successful model.
Well, and a lot of places have, you know, those sort of sayings that they put up on the walls about, you know, goals and challenges and being better than, you know, what you perceive your place in society and life. But what is it where's your funding come from, and how were you able to attract the teachers that were committed to this in an environment that you already described as helpless and hopeless?
Mm-hmm. So the funding that we get is the funding that's provided by the Department of Education. We don't get additional funding, so we're not a charter school. So whatever we have is what we get. So that's from city, state, and federal funding. Our operating budget does not really meet the needs of what we require in the school, so it's just about being very, very creative in terms of being strategic and leveraging relationships to get any additional support that's required. So if that means getting trips to happen, someone is going to sponsor the trips. Getting lunches for an activity, someone's going to sponsor that. But in terms of the salaries that teachers get, it's the same across the board. It's a unionized school system, so they get a certain amount based off of their experience as well as the degrees that they possess. But the teachers have to want to do this, right? And so as a school leader, I lead by example. I'm committed to showing up and being in the classroom. I'm committed to staying late. I'm committed to helping my staff members be the best that they can be. And so that means that there's a buy-in and trust when it comes to who I am as a leader and what I want for this entire community. So the success is not just about my scholars, but the authentic regard for my team itself. And so I draw off of, you have to be a team. Regardless of what, we are a village. We are the ones who have to be committed to this. And so when I describe what the landscape is, that's the landscape. And everyone should be outraged that this is the landscape in New York City, in one of the richest cities in the world in 2017. This is not somewhere else. This is not a third world country. This is the United States of America. So my outrage as an individual who lives in the community of Brooklyn is to say, I need to do something. And so what we're doing is disrupting that. So despite what the percentage or the statistics of those who come in is every single year, I can proudly say that I have my first graduating class who just went into college. And because of the funding that we got from Humans of New York, we were able to give kids scholarships. My second graduating class is on their way to going to college. We've created a legacy group so that those scholars can come back to the building, get the support that they need, mm-hmm. because their parents haven't gone to college. They're first generation to go to college. So those of us who are here in this building are committed to being the example and helping them through. But it's not about just 3 years. For me, it's being here for the long haul and making sure that we can see them go through the distance, because this is not a sprint. It's really a marathon.
You know, Nadia, there are so many challenges in inspiring children and raising mm-hmm. children, no matter what kind of community, no matter how affluent the community is, how mm-hmm. many opportunities are provided. I mean, with 40% of the Brownsville residents living below the poverty line, obviously mm-hmm. you have so much bigger kinds of challenges. But we always come back to, what are those words? What mm-hmm. are the word? What are the moments that make the difference for children? And you know, you talk about, you know, the pledge, the school's pledge of respect, kindness, enthusiasm, mm-hmm. achievement, citizenship, and hard work. But I'm just wondering, you know, what are those aha moments for you? What have you just said to a student and you see the light go on in their eyes that makes you say, oh, yes, okay, this was a great thing?
You know, listening is something that I learned when I was going through a nursing program. So I graduated before I went into education. My background is actually in nursing, and so the most important thing you could ever do for anyone is to listen to them. And for many of these children, no one has ever listened to them, even in their households, because there's just so much that is going on that their parents are having to deal with that, you know, oftentimes just them being present, children making it home is often just enough, like a celebration that they made it, because leaving from work to get to school sometime, or leaving from school to just get home, you know, they might not make it. We've had incidents where a mother was shot and killed protecting five kids because there was gang activities near a school building. And so that's part of their everyday life. But just sitting down, talking to them one-on-one, in small groups, you know, my approach is just really different. I'm very hands-on. I'm in classrooms every single day, and I've been doing this for 8 years now. And I did it because I knew that that's what worked when I was a classroom teacher. It was developing the relationships with the kids. And I can do that because the school is but 210 kids. However, you know, if it was a larger school, I may not be able to touch the lives of every single child. But the way I have cultivated the school's culture, the adults are expected to do the same. So we have a champion program where every adult has 10 scholars that they are responsible for. They're literally their advisors. They check in with them. They check their grades. They're liaison for the parents. Because I understand that these are the needs, and some parents just simply don't have the capacity because they don't have the parenting skills. When you have a parent who may have started having kids at the age of 12 or 13 themselves, it speaks about what they were doing when they were in school and what kind of education they were receiving. So parents trust that by putting their kids here, there's going to be a cycle broken and that their kids are going to be the first ones to graduate. And that's what they really want to see happen. And so that's something that needs to happen. It shouldn't be that because of the neighborhood, the race, socioeconomics. It should be for every child. That's just my personal belief.
And Nadia, are you seeing that happen, that traction being gained, which I would say is fairly transformative with your first class going off to college?
Yes.
And being the first generation in many cases of families that have gone off to college? That's got to be a transformative moment, not only for those children, not only for those families, but for that entire community.
It definitely is.
Can you see examples of that already? Because I know you've just begun.
Well, no, the kids come back. So my scholars, my graduates come back to the school. They literally flood the building when they have days off because high school schedule is totally different from middle schools oftentimes. They volunteer. And so they get to share their stories. They get to share their stories not only with the staff members here but also the scholars themselves, which is actually more powerful than anything else that I can say that I could do. And that's because, you know, even for the teachers who work hard and sometimes can't see beyond the trees, when you get to hear from the children themselves to say to the teacher, don't give up. I know when I was in middle school, I was that kid who you just wanted to rip your hair out, but I got it when I finally went to high school. And so now this is my story. The teachers feel that sense of reward because oftentimes once kids leave middle school and go to high school, you know, they go on to another chapter in life and they have great times and they don't often come back. But the teachers are constantly reminded of the work that they do and how it's going beyond our school building. And then for the community themselves, what I will say, because a lot of my parents have multiple children, they all end up coming to the school. So if one comes in, I'm just expecting the rest of the kids to come in as well. So once the parents are trusting and they know, like, Miss Lopez is here for our kids, it just becomes, again, like the cycle. It no longer is about children going to prison or children dying or ending up with having more kids. It's about, we know that there's going to be an outlook for them to either go into a really lucrative career, starting their own business, or they're going to go into college.
Wow. Nadia Lopez, what a wonderful body of work that you have created. And now this book, it's called The Bridge to Brilliance, How One Woman and One Community Are Inspiring the World. Thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life, and congratulations for all of your great work.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure talking to the both of you.
All right. Take care.
Have a great one. Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow. It's really an incredible book. And again, it's The Bridge to Brilliance, How One Woman and One Community Are Inspiring the World. Our guest, Nadia Lopez, you can find her on a TED Talk. You can find in Humans of New York. A very interesting story. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters.
For adventurers on a budget, the Utah Olympic Park offers a host of activities at no charge. Admission and parking are always free. Start with a tour of the Alf Engen Ski Museum and the Eccles 2002 Winter Games Museum. Best of all, come support athletes from all over the world who train at the park. Open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Details available at utaholympiclegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities. and a KPCW supporter.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.